Techonomics on KGO 810. The future is coming way faster than anyone really anticipated. Things like artificial intelligence, constant surveillance, and even driverless cars are graduating from science fiction to reality. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with two Silicon Valley thought leaders about the approaching technology and the age of a post-privacy world. That conversation with the co-founder of Wired and the former chief science officer at Amazon starts now.
Hi, everybody, and thanks for listening to Techonomics. The amount of data we generate every day is mind-boggling. 2.5 quintillion bytes of data every day. I mention that staggering statistic because an ongoing theme on this show is preparing for a global economic pivot that's already underway from the industrial to the digital age. This week, we host two digital age thought leaders, two Silicon Valley stalwarts, who will discuss not just data generation, but also its repercussions, both positive as well as foreboding. The co-founder and editor-at-large of Wired magazine, Kevin Kelly, joins us. We also host Amazon's former chief science officer, physicist, and Cal Berkeley lecturer, Andreas Weigand. They both want to help us with our digital literacy.
That is part of data literacy. And if you think about it for a moment, literacy has always been making sense out of things. In the past, it was out of texts. Now, in this world, with the exponentially increasing numbers of numbers, it is making sense out of numbers.
Should we accept a post-privacy world? What about automation and robots replacing human jobs? Just how intelligent should artificial intelligence become? Kevin Kelly's latest book is titled The Inevitable, Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future. Andreas Weigand's book is Data for the People, How to Make Our Post-Privacy Economy Work for You. We thought it would be productive to have both authors in studio to discuss the technological forces that are creating wonderful advances while also generating some popular anxiety. All right, here we go. I am confused as to where to start, so I'm going to start at a 30,000-foot view. And let's take a common theme on this show has been citizen science. And I think that with both of you in studio, I think citizen data might be a good approach for us to go at. Could you help me one at a time, and we'll start with you, Kevin, please. If I throw that term at you, citizen data, how does that work through your rubric?
It's an essential literacy that's emerging, which is our ability as citizens in order to understand the value, the power, and the paradoxes that are inherent in more and more data about us and about other people rising in the world. So there's an ocean of data, and we need to acquire a new literacy about it.
Okay, we're going to come back and land on that pad. Andreas, what do you have?
Yes, part of that data literacy is to know what's possible and what's impossible, what's plausible, what's implausible. So what physicists know, we sometimes call it order of magnitude calculations of whether something is a number of 10, 100, 1,000, 10,000. That is part of data literacy. And if you think about it for a moment, literacy has always been making sense out of things. In the past, it was out of texts. Now, in this world, with the exponentially increasing numbers of numbers, it is making sense out of numbers.
An order of magnitude of data, that we create more data every day, right? Who owns that data? Am I not the creator slash publisher of what I click on and hover on every day? And should I not have the opportunity to monetize that? Am I my own RJM Incorporated when it comes to my digital life moving forward? Or has it already been co-opted? That might be a separate question. Let's start with the beginning one.
I'm maybe in the minority view on this in that I don't think we should import the ideas from the industrial age of ownership into data. I think that there are different claims of both rights and responsibility by any party that touches data. So that could go from my body that's generating my heartbeat to the maker of the device that's going to measure it, to the creator of the software that's embedded in the device, to the carriers, the telecom carriers who carry it, to the organizations that store it. All these agents, all these parties have claims of both rights and responsibilities for that bit. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, it's an ecosystem rather than an outright ownership by a single entity.
I see. That's a tough lily pad to land on. Andres, you're shaking your head.
So you might be wondering, why do we care about ownership of data?
That's fair. It makes me sound very 20th century in a lot of ways, yes.
So I think we want to ask a question, what is the value of data? Because, you know, if there's no value, most people wouldn't care. So I think one value of data is the impact that data has on decisions. There are other values of data.
Yeah. And I think the issue of ownership is really an old model. And it's like saying, well, I own my genes. Of course, you don't own your genes, the data about your genes. First of all, it's shared. 99% of it is shared with other people. And we don't own our faces to a certain extent. It's something that's being shared. So the value of data is generally proportional to how much it's shared. So things, the more that they're shared, the more valuable they become. The more they're shared, the less you can claim to own things. And so I think the model of ownership comes from an era when the value and things were separate and individual and atomic. And we have a world in which data is really more like a living ecosystem with many, many parties and many relationships. And the data is actually dependent on how complicated it is. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the notions of ownership becomes less important.
If the value of the dataverse is in its ability to be shared, it seems like data scientists would have an opportunity to have a massive role in forming the way we move forward. Am I off base on that?
No, you're absolutely right.
Okay.
Because one of the things which we have learned is that often it is not the answers which are the important things, but it is asking good questions which moves things forward. So like the question here, what is the value of data? Or what does it mean to own data? Or even is that a good question? When I teach, I tell people that undergraduates learn to answer questions. Graduate students learn to ask questions. And then the question is, what is a good question?
Right. Another way of saying that is that the data itself becomes less valuable over time when more valuable is the questions you ask with the data or from the data, which, of course, will generate new data in itself. Mm-hmm. Which becomes less valuable until it's a new question is asked.
It's a very Zen-like response. It's not the destination, it's the journey kind of a thing, right? So, but as we add these orders of magnitude to data every day, that becomes, it even sharpens the question of the role of the data scientist. Is that what you or both are trying to address in your recent books?
So my book doesn't really address data scientists. My book, Data for the People, tries to help people to become data literate and put some stakes in the ground about the rights that everybody, consumers, citizens, should have with respect to data.
Okay.
There is a sense in our own lives that more and more of our activities are being recorded, more and more of our lives are being in some ways captured by somebody, government, or by corporations, or even our friends when they take a picture of us and tag us on Facebook. So there is a sense in which all this is happening, and the question is it good for us or not? And behind all that happening are scientists and technologists making more and more data and generating it and then trying to make sense out of it. So that's where the science comes in. It's obviously being driven by people who can handle all this kind of data.
Those are our ones and zeros.
Those are the ones and zeros, and there's a lot of them. I mean, we can talk about magnitudes. There's a lot. And the question is, does that bring us direct benefit as individuals? Does it bring benefit to society? Does it bring benefits to the business? It seems like it's certainly bringing benefit to the business. Does it bring value to our own lives?
Right.
And I think it does.
Okay.
And then the question is, does it bring it to society as a large? And that's a little bit more complicated question.
That was part one of my chat with Kevin Kelly and Andreas Wiegand. Kevin Kelly's latest book is titled The Inevitable: Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future. Andreas Weigand's book is titled Data for the People: How to Make Our Post-Privacy Economy Work for You. These Silicon Valley thought leaders have a lot to say and a lot of useful data for consumers coping with the coming wave of technology, whether it's in our homes, our cars, phones, workplace. So this was part one of three segments. If you're listening on the podcast, please keyword search for the other two. We think it's worth your while. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.